Okay, this piece is Gemara. Now we're going to be talking about the next phase of Gemara, and that is Edim Zaymimim, who admit on their own, something that Rabbi Akiva said, but we're going to bring up a side point on this topic about Edim admitting on their own. So the Gemara comes up with a Chiddush. We're on the top of Gimel Lamed Aleph, second line. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Eid Zaymim Meshalim Lefi Chelkai. And Eid Zaymim is going to pay. Is this disturbing you? And Eid Zaymim pays his portion. Now, simply, you'll understand that to mean that if two Eidim testify that Reuven owes Shimon 100 bucks, each Eid will chip in 50. They don't each get paid 100. Each one will chip in for it. That's the simple understanding of the words. I review them. Rav, Eid Zaymim, Mashalim, Fichalkai, and Eid Zaymim pays his portion. Think about what did he mean? What was Rav say? My Mashalim, Fichalkai. What did he mean that he pays his portion? Each one pays half of their whole plan. Tanina, that's old news. We looked at it in the Mishnah already. I don't need Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav to say that. There's a Mishnah that says, Mishal Shalin B'mamayin. We divide up the payments of money. Ve'in Mishal Shalin B'malkas. But if they make a guy get makot, we don't say they should each get 20 and 20. They get a full 40. We divide their payments. We don't divide the makos. So we already know that we divide payments. So what did Rav mean? Ella. We're going to go through a few steps to try to get to what Rav meant. Ella. Maybe this is the case. Kigoy. Let's say we didn't catch both of them for them both to chip in for the payment. Let's say only one of them was caught being in Hawaii when he claimed something happened on Sunday. So only one of them is caught. He'll pay just his 50. The Mishalim Palgadi Day. I would have thought maybe he should pay the whole thing because the other guy was in the catch. No, he only pays his half. So, well, that's not true. Umi Mishalim, do you ever make Edim Zomimim pay when you only catch one without the other? V'atani, we learned in Abayisa, in Edim Zomimim Mishalim Mamin, Adji Yizum Shneim. The punishment of Kasher Zomam, this punishment that you get what you planned, is only if you catch them both. So if you catch only one, he's not paying for half, he's not paying for all, he's not paying anything. So for the Gemara, that can't be what Rav meant, because if you only catch one, he's not paying 50, he's not paying anything. Okay, attempt number three. Amar Rava. But Oimer, Eidus Sheker Adati. Maybe it's where one of them says, I lied. He admits on his own. And therefore he pays 50. For Gemara, what are you talking about? Can an aide come in and say, I lied? Do we listen to him? Kol Kamine, does he have any belief to what he's saying? Does he have power to say that? We have a rule, Kivan Shehigid, once you say a testimony, Shuvani Chayzu Magid, you can't retract it. He's bound. He can't come in and say, oh, I lied. Answer four. This one's going to stick. Ella, Zagdi Gemara. Maybe it's going to stick. No, we still have one more. Ella, Ba'imer, He Adnu, V'Hizamnu, Bebezdin Pleni. One of them comes in, again, we're dealing with one because we can say he only pays his portion. One comes into Bez in New York and he says, we testified and we were caught as liars in Chicago. See, he's saying we were already caught as Edim Zoymimim, and I can't retract my Edus, but I'm telling you, my Edus was already retracted by another Kat of Edim that came in and testified against me. I was already caught as an Ed Zoymim. He's turning himself in. You know, he escaped, he ran, and now he's in New York, he's feeling guilty, and he comes in and he says, you should know, I was caught together with my friend as Edim Zaymim back in Chicago. So then we're going to say he pays half, he only pays his 50? Kiman, who is this going like? If you're going to tell me that if I come into a Beis Din here and say I was caught in a different Beis Din, and therefore I should have to pay, and we're going to actually make you pay, then you have a case where an Ed is paying on his own admission. We had no idea he's an Eid Zomim. He's telling me that he was caught as an Eid Zomim somewhere else. So he is now admitting to his own sin. So you're right. We're able to believe him to retract the testimony because it's not him retracting the testimony. He's saying that he already was caught on a lie in a different method. So that we can believe him on. But how do we make him pay? Rabbi Akiva says an Eid Zomim does not pay on his own admission. And here Rav is saying that we're going to make you pay half. We're going to make you pay the 50. Is Rav going against Rabbi Akiva? So I think Marta like Rabbi Akiva. That's against Rabbi Akiva. Dear Rabbi Akiva, Omar. Don't pay on their own admission. Ella. Answer number five. What did Rav mean? But Omer, where one guy says, Hey Antnu Vihuzamnu Bebezin Plani. We testified and we were already caught in Chicago. Vichyavnu Mamai. And Bezin already punished us, telling us that we owe $100 in Chicago. So now it's like a case where after Edom already caught me, now I'm admitting, too late, right? In this case, Rabbi Akiva would be fine with them paying. He's not self-incriminating. He was already incriminated there. Bezin didn't just catch him as a liar. Bezin caught him as a liar. And Bezin told him, now pay. And then he ran out of Bezin. Well, if he ran out of Bezin after Bezin already told him to pay, he's not self-incriminating anymore. He was already incriminated. And Bezin already said he's owes $100. Good? So then we're okay with him paying the 50. So then what's Rav's chiddush? So of course he paid 50. Why not? Basically he's saying, you know, I got a bill in the mail in Chicago. Can I pay it here? No. Yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. I got a bill from a Bezdin in Chicago. I'd like to pay. Sure. Then what's Rav's chiddush? That an Eid Zomim pays his portion. Of course he pays his portion. Zog de Gemara. I would have thought, since only one person is claiming this in the Bezdin New York, not both of them are coming in, only one of them is. And he can't incriminate his friend. We don't know anything about his friend. He's claiming that he and his friend were both caught in a different Bezdin and both fined in a different Bezdin. So I would have thought, since he's not believed against his friend, so I would say, we shouldn't be mechayev him either. If he can't make his friend pay, maybe he shouldn't pay either because they're a group. Kamash Malan, if you admit that you were already caught and already got a psak din to pay in Chicago, you pay your half here in New York. That's Rav's chiddush. You could pay anywhere, but the chiddush is, I would have said, since we don't believe you on your partner, this guy testified together with somebody in Chicago, and we don't believe him on his partner to make his partner pay. I don't have any information about his partner. He's claiming that he and his partner testified falsely somewhere. And but I would have said we should drop the whole thing. No, you'll pay your part. Good? Five steps to get to what Rav meant. But we got it. Baruch Hashem. Next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is probably the hardest Mishnah in Maseches Makis. Maybe in Shas. Ooh, it's a tough one, huh? Here we go. Okay, we're going to do a little probabilities and betting and gambling. You ready? Yeah. Here we go. This is a shidduch. Okay, let's forget about Reuven and Shimon right now because that wouldn't be a shidduch. We're going to have Reuven and Rachel. Okay, Reuven and Rachel. Reuven and Rachel have a shidduch. Now, when they make a shidduch, there's a little financial agreements that we got to, you know, set up. So it's called a ksuba. Reuven says, if I divorce you or if I drop dead, you're making some big money. $10,000. Yeah, by the Sfardim, they put it up there, you know that? This Friday, went, yeah, $10 million. The guy never even saw $500,000 in his life. He's promising $10 million, yeah. Anyway, so they write this in the Ksuba that if I divorce you or if I drop dead, you get $10,000 for my Yerusha. Nice. She, on the other hand, if she drops dead, he gets a Yerusha. He gets her full inheritance. Whatever belongings she comes into the wedding with. What? Whatever she gets. She dies, he's the Yorish. But he doesn't have to pay her anyone. Right? So he keeps his money, and he gets her money. Okay, so pretty much a fair square deal. Okay, let's assume, this is going to help make things much more simple. Let's assume that her inheritance to him, in case she dies, is worth $10,000. All she has is a half-beat-up car. Okay, that's all she has coming into the marriage. And let's assume that his ksuba promise to her was $10,000. Okay, both equal? Good. Edom walk in. And they say, Reuven, you divorced your wife yesterday, and you owe her a ksuba. He's like, what are you talking about? We're still married. So what are they trying to make him lose? They're trying to make him lose his wife, and they're trying to make him lose $10,000, right? The problem is, so now they get caught. Two other Edom come in and say, what do you mean? How could you say that he divorced his wife yesterday in New York? You were with his wife. You couldn't have seen the divorce. Okay, so we catch him and we make them pay what they planned to make him lose. Now, what did they make him plan to make lose? $10,000. No. Why not? There is a chance that anyway they were going to have Shalom Bayis problems and he was going to divorce her tomorrow. Right. So how much can you say they are for sure making him lose? Let me give you a mashal. Let's say last night they heard him screaming at her, throwing dishes at her, threatening her, and saying, tomorrow I'm going to the sofer and we're getting a get and I'm divorcing her. And they jumped the gun and they testified, of course, that he's ready to divorce. I mean, chances are he's going to get divorced anyway. Can you say they made him lose $10,000? Anyway, he's going to pay her $10,000 in a day or two.
You never know.
That's what we call a gamble.
Imagine right now, during the day, you're in DRS, you can't go home.
So the question is, how do we define the loss that they were making him lose? Here's a guy, there's a chance that anyway he was going to lose the $10,000. So they brought it from a chance to lose $10,000, and they were trying to make it for sure losing $10,000. How much? There's a chance of him dying also, and anyway we have to pay. But the point is, anyway there was a chance of loss, but they're bringing it from a chance to 100% loss. How much do they pay?
What is normal going to Melosh?
Great question, right? Now, besides for that, there's a second cheshbon over here, and that is like this.
Right.
Okay? In the ksuba, there's two things. By them saying he's divorcing her, number one, they're saying that he owes her $10,000. There was a chance he was going to lose that anyway. But they're saying he got to pay $10,000. And also, he's going to lose out his opportunity of ever getting her Yerusha. He's never going to get her inheritance if he divorces her. Right?
Yeah.
You got to think about that too. Correct? Okay. So how do we assess the loss? One way to assess the loss is, let's look at her end of the deal. On her end of the deal, if she would get divorced... Okay?
Sure.
Now we have everything for you.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, but listen to this question, right?
She dies, not if she divorces him.
What?
She dies, not if she divorces him.
If he dies, right, if she dies, she loses 10,000. Tim, yeah. Okay, but let's see. We're trying to figure out how much he's losing. So we have to figure out the probabilities of him anyway divorcing, what their chance touches up. So in a simple way, I would say very simple. He's got a gamble over here. He's got a gamble. On the one hand, he could win $10,000 from her. If he poisons her. Or if she drops dead naturally. He could win $10,000 from her. On the other hand, he could lose $10,000. His zechut. Let's say he's down and out and he needs some cash. He wants to make a quick cash deal on a house. He doesn't have cash. What does he have? All he has is, I've got a ticket. I've got a lottery ticket. I got my ksuba. I'm going to sell my ksuba in the market. I'm going to go around the market. Say, hey guys, I got a stock. It could go up, it could go down. You could lose money on it. Because if I die or divorce, you'll have to pay $10,000 to this woman. But if she dies, and you know, she's got cancer and this and that. If she dies, you make money on it. How much can this guy sell his lotto ticket for?
$5,000.
Let's say $5,000. Okay? So if his lotto ticket to hopefully get her Yerusha one day is worth $5,000, then that's what they're making him lose now.
So he loses $5,000.
Because by them saying you divorced her, pay it up now, he's losing that opportunity of ever selling his lottery ticket. So he's losing $5,000. We'll have to assess in the market what these probabilities versus what's written in the ksuba, how much is in there. Every ksuba is going to be different. So we'll have to assess that in the market. Okay? But to figure out the fair price to make these eidim pay, we have to take that into cheshbon. What's the probabilities of anyway divorce? And how does that calculate into how much of a chance and a gamble he's got over here? But it doesn't stop there. So this is the most complicated mission. Okay? You ready? In this gamble itself, there's two ways to look at it. There's his side of the gamble, and there's her side of the gamble. Let's explain. On the one side, if she drops dead, right? Let's assume they're both $10,000. So, l'chayr, they're both equal. The chances are all the same, right? Oh, yeah, even though there's two chances on him paying her, divorce or death, only one chance she's going in. But okay, but let's assume the money's the same, $10,000. He's got something a little bit more than her in this. You know why? Because if she dies, If she dies, he doesn't have to go anywhere to collect the 10,000. The car is sitting in the driveway already. It's called a muhzak. I'm already holding on to the money. She's got to collect it from the Yarsha. That's the whole process, a headache, and maybe they'll deny it. I mean, that in itself is a big deal. That's number one. Number two, there's something that he has right now because of the ksuba. And that is whatever she brings in, this car, let's say, that she brought into the marriage, he gets to use now, even though it's not his car. It's not his car until she drops dead. But the halacha is he gets to use it. He could rent it out now. He gets temporary income and usage from the car. So even if the dollar amounts would be the same, his end of the bargain is a little better. So I'm going to change your number amount, if you don't mind. Okay? I'm going to change your number amount and say, just from probabilities, they'd be the same. I would say a gamble to get $10,000. If there's a gamble to get $10,000, I wouldn't put down more than $3,000. It's a gamble. For him, maybe I'd pay $4,000. Because he's got an advantage over here. It's a gamble, but it's got the advantage that he already has the stuff in his driveway. And he could use it now. Good? So his side of the gamble is worth $4,000. Her side of the gamble is worth $3,000. Meaning, if she would walk around in the market, let's say she wants to get herself a new wig, a new necklace for the chag, and she needs cash, she's going to take her gambling ticket and say, hey, who wants an opportunity to one day get $10,000 from my husband? People would give her $3,000 for that gamble. If he's walking around the market saying, who wants my side of the gamble of one day yarshining her, getting her Yerusha, people will give her $4,000. So his side of the gamble and her side of the gamble have different values. Got it? Now let's do the Gemara. Zog the Mishnah. May Eden on who has his shagi, which is ishtoi, v'loi nasan l'ksubasa. They testify that a guy divorced his wife and did not yet pay the ksuba. So they're trying to make him pay $10,000, right? V'loi bin ayim u'bein l'mokar, so if he lidin l'ksubasa. It's very possible that today, tomorrow, the next day, anyway, he would have had to pay her a ksuba. So what do we assess? Omdin, we assess. Kama adam hotze liten miksuba sarsozu. How much would a person pay for the gamble? She'im nis almala oynis garsha. On the one hand, if he dies and leaves her as an amana, or if he divorces her and makes her a grusha, he'll be paying her. The imesa, and on the other side of the gamble, if she dies, Yerushana Baila. The husband gets the money. So these are the two sides of the gamble. You might have to pay money, you might win money. How much will people pay for this? So we made our own assessment. Her side of the gamble is worth 3,000, his side of the gamble is worth 4. Good? The Mishnah is not clear how much the Edom should pay. It just says we assess how much people would pay for the gamble. But his side or her side? Zog the Gemara, here we go. Kate Zad Shamin. How do we make this evaluation? We look at his side of the gamble. Meaning, if his ticket right now is worth $4,000 and they're making him pay everything, they're making him lose this $4,000 opportunity. Make them pay $4,000. You look at her side of the gamble and you make him pay $7,000.
Why do you leave me now in my gulas?
That was the trick. Ready? If she could sell her side of the gamble for $3,000, that means that the chance for her to get $10,000 one day is right now worth $3,000. Correct? So then, that's anyway what it's worth right now in her hands. So that pretty much is what anyway he would have been paying. That $3,000 is already covered. It's the other $7,000 that they're making him lose. Okay? So we're going to make them pay when it says be'isha. He doesn't pay. So it's either 4,000, his side of the gamble, because they're making him lose the 4,000, or they're going to make him, we're going to look at her side of the gamble, which is 3,000, and he's going to pay the remainder of it. Because the 3,000 is like it's paid already. She can walk around, she can cash that in right now, the 3,000. What?
Who wins the
machloket? Omar Rav Papa. Yeah, you thought it was so simple. Beisha. Ubik Subasa. We're going to go with her side of the gamble, which is the $7,000 remainder. But you should just know, we're not going with everything written in the ksuba. Because not necessarily do the Edom know about that. We're going to go with the standard amount he wrote, even though maybe he wrote investments and other things. What's written in the ksuba, the actual dollar amount, we're going to use the probabilities and gamble on the specific dollar amount. But anything else that was thrown in, we're not going to use. Because that is going to say it's hard for the Edom to say that they planned on that. Good. You just got one of the most complicated Gemaras in Makkos. No kidding.
Very short, though.
You try to do this yourself? Woo! And there's a Rashi here? Okay, let's go fight it. Next piece of Gemara, much easier. They testify that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000. Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 and it's due in a month. And Reuven says, what? You're right, I owe him $1,000? But it's a 10-year loan. It's not due in a month, it's due in 10 years. Well, how do we assess what they're trying to make him lose? He's agreeing that he owes $1,000. So we have to assess the difference of value to people. How much would you pay to have a month loan of $1,000,000? And you know what you could do with $1,000,000 in a month? So you could invest it, just interest in the bank. You put $1,000,000, you make some good money on it, right? So $1,000,000 is worth a certain amount of money to you for a month. $1,000,000 is worth a lot more to you for 10 years. How much would people, what's the difference that people would pay for a short-term loan or a long-term loan? That difference is what the Edom Zayimim have to pay. They were trying to knock down his loan from a 10-year loan to a one-month loan. That's the difference the Edom Zayimim have to pay. Good? Now there's a problem with this because it's ribbons. What would you pay for a long-term loan? Isn't that interesting? So okay, for the Gemara, we'll deal with that. Zog the Gemara. So Oimdin, Kamo Adam writes a lead in via biyade elavzus bein nois in the kamad lavi. How much would a person pay to hold on to 1,000 zuz for 30 days? Bein nois in the kamad lavi. How much a person would pay for a 10-year loan? And that difference amount is what the Edom Zayim are going to pay. Simple. Good. The Gemara is going to go off on a tangent now, and that's going to be as follows. We have a rule called Shemitah. Shemitah tells you you can't work the land in the seventh year in Eretz Yisrael, right? But there's another halakha of Shemitah that people are less familiar with, and that is loans that cross over Shemitah get canceled. Did you know that? A lot of people don't know that. And what's interesting about that is it doesn't only apply in Israel. It applies in chutz la'aretz as well, because that's not an agricultural law. Agricultural mitzvot apply in Eretz Yisrael. But things that are not agricultural apply right here, New York City. So you go and you lend somebody $1,000 and it crosses over Shemitah. Goodbye to $1,000. Now the Gemara says the person could come to you and say, here, I'd like to pay. And you could tell him, hey, Shemitah canceled. And he says, I'd like to give it to you as a gift. That's fine. The point is you don't have rights to that money. Pass Shemitah. Bomb, right? So what's the problem we're going to have with this? Our mission just discussed a 10-year loan. Oh, yeah, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a 10-year loan. If a guy lends somebody for 10 years, Shvius cancels the loan. No more loan. No such thing. It disappears. Right? The Aval Gav the Hashta Lo Karina Bay. Loyigos, and even if right now it's not really the time to collect, in other words, like this, when the Torah tells you not to collect loans, the Torah says when Shemitah comes, don't collect. I would have said, 1 second, let's say you have a 10-year loan. Shemitah comes in year 7. So maybe Shemitah doesn't hit it, because it's not really time to collect anyway. Shemitah tells me, don't collect. I'm not collecting. Shemitah doesn't actually cancel. Shemitah just says don't collect. So I'm not collecting. It's not even due yet. Of course I'm not collecting. But he tells me a chiddush that when the Shemitah tells you don't collect, it means you can't collect anymore in the future either. See, even though right now during Shemitah it's only year 7, not year 10, so it's not really to the collection point yet, and it's hard to say that the Torah is telling you don't collect, but anyway, I'm not collecting. So, asili de lo yugos. In the end, this loan is going to be collectable, and the Shemitah is telling you don't collect it. Good, Shemitah will cancel a 10-year loan. In fact, the Gemara, I don't understand. Armish says we have to assess the difference between a 10-year loan and a 30-day loan. Yeah? Besides the fact that the Mishnah said there's something called a 10-year loan, we got a more lumdish question over here. One second. How much is $1,000 worth to you to hold on to for a month? Let's say $10. $10 interest, right? How much is $1,000 worth to you for a 10-year loan? The full 1,000. Because when you get to 10 years, you won't have to pay back. Shemitah knocks it off. What are you telling me? Let's figure out how much would people pay to get a 10-year loan? You'd pay the whole loan amount. It's a gift, basically. $1 million for 10 years is a $1 million gift. So what does the Mishnah tell me? We have to assess how much people would pay the difference between a month loan and a 10-year loan. A 10-year loan is a gift. You don't have to assess anything. Obviously, our Mishnah holds that there's something called a 10-year loan that has to be paid back. What? Oh, here we go. We got to search for that. Mazen Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana challenges this. Oindin, we said in our Mishnah, Kama Adam Rotsa Liten via Elof Zuz via Do. Ben Liten Mikan Vad Lama Yoim. Ben Liten Mikan Vad Esa Shanim. The difference between a 30-day loan and a 10-year loan. Remember this? We learned Makas together, didn't we? A few times. We learned Makas together a few times. V'i Amitsh V'i Esmash Amitasi. But if you're telling me that 7 years knocks off a 10-year loan, Kulunami Vosh Lumalei, then the Adam should have to pay the full loan amount. It was basically a gift, and now they want him to pay up in a month. So they're turning a gift into a loan. They should have to pay the full million. It must be there's something that our Mishnah is overriding Shemitah with. Zagdi Mara or Rav Yehuda Amarav is wrong. Was Rav Yehuda Amarav? Yeah, Rav Yehuda Amarav. So either Shmuel's wrong, or there's a way to override it. Zagdi Mara, here we go. Amarav HaKam Maiskinan, the Malve Ala Mashkin. We're dealing with a loan that had a collateral. And if I lend you against your Rolex watch, and you gave me a Rolex watch, No. Shemitah won't cancel the loan.
Only this collateral.
If there's a collateral, Shemitah won't cancel the loan. Why? Because in some way it's considered collected already. If I'm holding on to your $10,000 watch, it's already like it's paid. Oh, you want your watch back in 10 years? No problem. Give me the money. I'll give you your watch back. So Shemitah doesn't cancel a loan on collateral. So that's what our mission is talking about. How come I skin on the milva alamashkin?
Yeah.
Or a similar case, when you give over your papers to Bezdin, Shemitah cancels private loans. But if you transfer your loan to Bezdin, it's not a private loan anymore, and it becomes collectible. This is what we call nowadays prusbo. Say what? Say what? Say what? Prusbo. Okay. Prusbo is a special contract in which you sign off all your loans to not be your own private loan anymore, and it's Bezdin's. It's like all of Klai Yisrael's loan. And then through Bezdin, it allows it to be collectible. This is a loophole. A roundabout way to avoid Shemitah. The one that came up with this idea was a great man. His name was Hillel. Okay? Zogdi Gemara. So Moses, the Reis Lebezin, Ema Shemitin. In both these cases, if you did it with a mashkin, or Moses, the Reis of, to Tanah, we lent to the Mishnah, Mavon, the mashkin, if somebody lent with a collateral, that Moses, the Reis Lebezin, somebody gives over his papers to Bezdin, ain't mashmita, then it doesn't cancel. So we're good to go.
What?
Our Mishnah is not a contradiction to Shmuel's din. Typically, a 10-year loan gets canceled, but there are ways to override it. So Gemara, Ikad Yamri, there are those that said this whole sugya in a mirror image, totally the opposite. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, "Amalva es chaver yoleh es shanim ein shvias mishem tasek." Shmuel said, Shemitah won't cancel a 10-year loan. Why won't it cancel the 10-year loan? Because during Shemitah itself, it wasn't collectible for the Torah to tell you don't collect. So a 10-year loan won't be affected by Shemitah. A 7-year loan will be affected when Shemitah hits. When you want to collect in year 7. But a 10-year loan won't be affected. And even though eventually, 3 years later, the Torah technically could have potentially told you don't collect in 3 years, but hashta, since right now during Shemitah, Mia, lo karina be lo yigais, right now, the Torah can't tell you don't collect because it's not collectible anyway, because it's year 7, it's not due yet. Shemitah will not cancel the loan. You have a good luck. Oh, well, if he said that Shemitah doesn't cancel, we have a proof from our Mishnah. It's great. Our Mishnah is great now. Omer Rav Kahana, afna nami tanina. I have a Mishnah to back up Shmuel's din. Omdin, we said in our Mishnah, "Kama dom rotzel liten via elav zuz biyadai ben liten mikarav adla amayoyim ben liten mikarav ezeshanim." We assess how much people will pay for the difference between a 30-day loan and a 10-year loan. Via amish shmias mishnah tasek. If you would think shmias cancels, kulin ami bosh luile, they would have to pay the whole loan amount. The fact that our Mishnah says there's something called a 10-year loan is because Shemitah doesn't work on a 10-year loan. Shmuel, we're a Shmuel van. Shemitah, so it's not a proof. Maybe really Shmuel's wrong. And maybe really Shemitah will cancel it. But our Mishnah was just using the overrides. The same way we defended Shmuel when we wanted to use the Mishnah as a kushya against him. Now when we're trying to prove Shmuel, we're deflecting the proof. Maybe really normally Shemitah will. Maybe really Shemitah will knock it off. So you can't prove Shmuel. So you want to know why in our Mishnah he has a 10-year loan. But Mavala Mashkin, my sister is the Bezin. Did not Mavala Mashkin, my sister is the Bezin? It must be thin. Good. No peace. I'm going to have you done much well. I'm going to have you done much well. I'm going to have you done much well. Let's say Ralph tells you, Ariel, I'm lending you $10,000. Shmita is coming soon. I'm lending you on condition that Shmita won't cancel my loan.
I know,
I can't do that. So, Shmia, you can't override the Torah. Shmita knocks it off. So Gemara, Lamech, Shavu, Shmuel, Masa, Masa, Kosovo, Teiru. Let's assume that this is because Shmuel says you're making conditions against the Torah, and you can't do that. V'chol Masa, Masa, Kosovo, Torah. Tanoi Batal. Anytime you try to work out conditions against the Torah, it doesn't work. But you can't say that because I have a contradiction. Ha'itmar, we learned another halacha. There's a law in the Torah that you're not allowed to overcharge for merchandise. Okay, let's say this has a standard price of $5. I can't charge you $8 for it. It's called highway robbery. I didn't say it's wholesale price of $5. It's retail price. There's a going market. It says on the box $5. And I'm taking advantage of you. I know you're in school and you need it for your regent. You came unprepared. $10, right? That's called highway robbery. It's not a mekach. And you could ask for the money back afterwards. Yeah. It's not a proper acquisition. It doesn't work. Okay? That's if I charge you double. If I charge you a sixth more, then you just get back the reimbursement. If you charge you more than a sixth more, you could do back the deal. Anyway, this is called ona'a, taking advantage in business. Anyway, so here we go. Ha'idmar, we learned. A guy tells his friend, I'm selling you this item on condition that you don't have claims of ona'a against me. I'm overcharging you, and I'm selling it to you on condition that you don't have claims of ona'a against me. You can't get back your money. Rav Oimer, yesh lo olav ona'a. Rav says, the laws of ona'a still apply. Shmuel says, ein lo olav ona'a. You're able to override the Torah.
I did.
And you're able to knock out this guy's claim. So one second. Shmuel on the one hand said that if you try to cancel Shemitah, too bad on you. Shemitah knocks you out. When it comes to ona'a, Shmuel says it works. You could make a tanai against ona'a. Ever the Gemara, it was explained to me from Shmuel's Kavanah what Shmuel meant. When you tell the guy, I'm selling this to you on condition that you don't have a claim of ona'a against me.
What?
Oh, he could give up his right to claim. I could sell this to you and say, I'm selling it to you on condition that you don't use your rights. I'm selling it to you on condition that you give up your rights to claim back the money. That could work. That's your rights. I'm not denying the fact that it is ona'a. It is ona'a. I'm overcharging you. I'm doing highway robbery. But I'm selling it to you. I know you're really desperate for it. Selling it to you on condition that you don't use your rights to claim against me. Ain loya lovana. In that case, there's taka no claim against him. But if he would say, I'm anasha ain bo ona, if I would say, I'm selling this to you for double the price on condition that it is not overcharging. This is not illegal. It is illegal. The Torah says it's ona. Hariyesh bo ona. Hachanami, the same thing will apply with Shemitah. If you tell a guy, I'm lending you the money on condition that you don't use Shemitah against me, meaning I'm expecting you to come back to me and give it to me as a gift after Shemitah, that works. Ain Shemitah Misham Tasek, then Shemitah won't cancel. The guy has to come back and pay. But if I say that Shemitah shouldn't affect the loan, too bad, Shemitah affects the loan. Good? Tana Hamalves Kaveh Stam. A guy lends his friend money and he doesn't say when to pay back. I lend you $10 and I didn't tell you when to pay back. Is there a time frame for it? Inoi Rashai Latoivai Poxmi Lam and Yoim. You have no rights to claim the money within 30 days. A standard loan, 30 days. Yeah. So Rabbi Bar Chana came to Rav Lameimar. Rabbi Bar Chana thought to say, that's talking about when you wrote down the loan. When you wrote down the loan, usually it's a bit long term. That's why you're writing it down, so people shouldn't forget. You owe me $100. Okay, you owe me $100. Why am I writing it? Because I'm scared you're going to forget. At what point do I think you're going to forget? Within a month, no one's forgetting. I'm lending it, obviously, for a month. So then within a month, I can't claim it from you. Oh yeah? Okay, so he says like this. I thought that this only applies to a loan that's written down. That's assumed to be a bit long term, out of concern that the guy's going to forget. That's why you're writing it. The layoven is a talk because of Starbucks and Mitlas and Yom. Nobody's writing down a loan if it's expected to be paid within 30 days. So if you write it, we assume that it's for 30 days. But if we don't bother writing it, then I'm assuming it's a very short-term loan. I didn't bother writing it. So I would think that if it's a milvah peh loy, on a milvah peh, maybe you are allowed to collect it within 30 days. No. This is what Habibi told me. My beloved told me, both a loan that's written and a loan that's not written, both of them you cannot ask within 30 days. But there's no svarav in that. Why? Tani nami yachi, but we talk learned like this in the Brisa. Hamavas gavi yistam. If you lend somebody within unspecified time, einu shel l'tayvi paksim shloshim yoyim. You're not allowed to demand it within 30 days. Echad amavu v'shtav, echad amavu v'beh. Whether it was written or not written, you cannot demand it within 30 days. Omei v'shmul v'hamasna, v'shmul tor hamasna. Loi teiz v'akarech. Don't you sit down on your feet? Add the mevarches law la'ishmait until you can explain this to me. Menah milza dam rabbanim. Where did the rabbis get this from? Somebody that lends his friend without a specified amount can't charge within a month? You're right, it's not something necessarily in logic. It's a pasuk. The Torah says, the pasuk says that a guy makes a loan and he's saying to himself, oh my gosh, it's coming, the seventh year, which is the year of Shemitah. Oh, and he's all worried about his loan. What's the pasuk talking about? Why is the pasuk repeat itself? We all know the seventh year of Shemitah. Why is the pasuk have to say, the seventh year is coming? Shemitah is coming. Yeah, the seventh year of Shemitah. The mashmash nema kovash nas ha-sheva, inia deyashi shnas Shemitah. It already says the seventh year. Don't I know that it's talking about the Shemitah? Ela. Ma tamo lebe shnas ha-Shemitah. Why is it shnas Shemitah? Le melecha yeh Shemitah ha-kevash yeh shkizu. There's another type of Shemitah in the Torah that prevents you from collecting. There's a seventh year that prevents you from collecting loans. And there's another thing that prevents you from collecting. There's another type of Shemitah that's not in the seventh year. When you lend somebody with unspecified time, you're not within 30 days, it's like Shemitah. It's not a permanent Shemitah that knocks out the loan entirely, but it's a temporary Shemitah that restrains you from collecting within 30 days. It says Shnas HaShemitah. It says a year. Zog the Gemara, Shloshim Yom Bishana, Chashim Shana, regarding certain halachas, 30 days out of a year is considered like a year. So Shnas HaShmita over here refers to a 30-day loan. Within 30 days, you cannot collect when if you did not specify how long the loan should be. I don't want to go too much over time.
What was his name? You know there was three, right?
Yeah.